Committed is a production of iHeartRadio.
Before we get started today, I want to offer up a quick note that this episode includes strong language and references to child pornography and child abuse. If this is a trigger for you, please consider that before listening. At the end of the episode, we'll also be providing resources for victims of sexual violence. It was 5 a.m. and Maddie Corman was driving to work from her house in Westchester. She's an actress and had a small part on a television show that was filming in Brooklyn. The car was quiet. She was just relieved to have made it out of the house without waking up her husband or three teenage children. Then her phone rang. It was her daughter, crying and screaming. Through her sobs, Maddie could make out that the police were at her house.
It was horribly surreal. I knew something was really, really, really wrong when I heard her. This was a blood-curdling kind of scream. And I didn't understand. And I called my husband, and he said, "I can't talk." And the tone of voice he used was something that I had never heard before either.
Maddie really didn't understand what was happening or what would happen next. All she learned was that the police were arresting her husband on child pornography charges. I'm Joe Piazza. This is Committed. Maddie Corman's husband, Jace, was arrested on July 29th, 2015. There's a lot of reasons we won't be hearing from Jace today. But we're talking to Maddie, and most of this is her story. But it's also the story of their marriage. How it was broken nearly beyond repair, and how they're both working to save it today. But let's back up to the beginning of this story. Long before Jace's arrest. Before they met, Maddie and Jace ran in the same circles. They were both actors in New York in the 80s and 90s. If you've listened to this podcast before, you know that we usually start with the origin story of a couple. You can often hear their voices light up as they stroll down memory lane. Everyone loves their origin story. Sometimes it's the best part of a relationship, even though we don't want to admit that. But for Maddie, even this memory's been marred by that 5 a.m. phone call.
Because it was such a great story, and it suddenly didn't feel so great anymore. We really met and started dating when I was living in L.A. but doing a movie in New York, and he was directing a play, and I went to see the play next door to his play. So it was his opening night and my friend's closing night, and we were all at the same bar afterwards. We just started talking, and I thought he was adorable, but he had dated one of my friends, who was there with me. And I said, "Well, I would never. And she said, "No, you know what? I actually think this would be a really good thing. I approve." He asked me out and he broke up with all the other people he was dating, which I think was five at the time. And we never dated anybody else after that.
Jace was sexy and funny and artsy, and Maddie fell head over heels for him, even though she'd promised herself she wouldn't get serious with anyone. A few months later, they said, "I love you" for the first time. Jace told Maddie he'd never met anyone with a heart as big as hers. 3 months after that, Maddie moved into Jace's New York brownstone. She was scared that it was moving so quickly, but he also made her feel completely safe and completely taken care of. He ended up proposing underwater on the island of Dominica. Jace tied a ring box to the bottom of a dock while they were scuba diving and pointed it out to Maddie on their dive. She could hardly breathe when she opened the box to find a diamond. Jace had to help her to the surface. They had this beautiful barefoot wedding in 1998 at Jace's mom's house in upstate New York. At the end of the ceremony, Jace's mom handed Maddie his silver baby cup. "He's your baby now," she told her.
I was madly in love, and I think he would say so was he. And we got pregnant really quickly, which was a happy accident. It was early in our marriage, like a couple weeks into our marriage. But that was fine. I was delighted. And we didn't have a long time of being together without being parents. He was very, very excited to be a dad. In fact, when he asked me to marry him, he said, you know, I wouldn't ask you if I wasn't ready to start a family. And it was a really big part of what we both wanted. And in fact, after we had our daughter, I said, this is amazing, and I don't know if I can ever have another. This is so incredible, but I don't know. And he said, well, I'm ready, so you tell me. And then a few years later, I said, okay, one more, and then I got pregnant with twins. So now I have three. And so we moved early on. We had been in the city, and he couldn't wait to go to the suburbs, which I was much more hesitant about because it's where I grew up. We had some really great times. We were very committed to our family. My career certainly took a backseat, and even his, he made choices. He traveled a lot, but there were times where he was offered really big jobs in Australia or long-term gigs out of town, and he would say no because of the family. He coached the kids' teams, and when he was away, because he was a very successful TV producer and director, so he'd have to be away sometimes, he would have his assistant coach Skype or FaceTime the games so that he could still have, you know, commentary. And he was a very involved dad with our kids. And that was a very big part of our marriage, was taking care of our three kids. I mean, we didn't travel without them. I can count on one hand probably the number of times we did, as they got older, you know, take a night in the city or something. But we were very much about being a family.
Their life looked perfect on social media, but it wasn't fake perfect. Maddie and Jace were actually happy. Of course they had problems. Everyone has problems. Sometimes Maddie was lonely. Sometimes Jace was distant, depressed, irritable. They weren't having nearly as much sex as they once had, but they also had three kids and jobs, and they were busy and tired, so Maddie didn't think, or she tried not to think, that it was a problem. And then came that 5 a.m. phone call.
It was really, really, really early, and I was actually in a great mood because it was very, very rare in my life that I was the first one up and out. And for a mom of three, it was like, oh, wait, I don't have to make anyone food. I'm not responsible for getting anyone to camp or school. I didn't have to walk the dog or feed the cat. It was that early that really every creature was asleep in my house. And I was going to film a guest spot on a TV show. And so I probably left the house around 4 a.m. and close to 5. My phone rang, and it was my daughter screaming, saying the police were there. And it was horribly surreal. I knew something was really, really, really wrong when I heard her. Kind of like when my kids were babies, I could tell one cry from another cry. Yeah, from a, like, I'm tired, or I scraped my knee, and if you don't look, I'll probably stop crying, to a, oh, there might be blood kind of cry. And this was a blood-curdling kind of scream. And I didn't understand. I didn't understand for a long time, really, what was going on. But I really didn't understand. And then I said, just hold on. And I called my husband, and he said, I can't talk. And the tone of voice he used was something that I had never heard before either. You know, telling you this now, it really still almost feels like someone else's life. It's still almost impossible to believe. We were not this secretly miserable family. So when someone has a secret and then you hear in their voice that, it still sends chills up my spine. Of course, what happened, but also just hearing my husband not sound like my husband. Known for 20 years, and again, really had the kind of relationship where we spoke all the time. I mean, no matter where he was, no matter what was going on, we checked in with each other, in a way almost too much, probably. And even when he would travel and work a lot and I was the go-to parent, he was very involved in decisions about the kids, about the family, about the dog. You know, I mean, it wasn't like, oh, well, he's just this guy who's, you know, paying the bills. That wasn't our life at all. And believe me, there are times I still ask that question, although I guess we probably, I don't know how racy we can be, I guess we don't usually tell each other, like, oh, by the way, then between 3 and 4, I was masturbating. Like, honestly, not to be funny, like, to be honest, like, there are certain things that You don't think to ask each other.
Somehow Maddie managed to do her job that day. She finished on set and left the soundstage. That's when she saw him. Her husband was standing on the street corner opposite the studio. Maddie hardly recognized Jace. He was pale, hunched over, broken. When he got in the car, she asked him three things. Is it true? How old? Did you ever touch anyone? Maddie punched him, threw up, didn't know how to breathe, and thought this was it. This was the end of their marriage. The end of the world, really. Now, Maddie and Jace both have high-profile jobs in the New York acting world. So there's no way this could be a private family affair. A terrible, but private secret. The very next day, the story was all over the news, all over social media. The headline, Law and Order director busted on child porn charges.
People ask me that all the time. What was your first instinct? It was triage. You know, this was not just, oh, I caught my husband looking at illegal pornography. This was the police were in my house arresting him for something I had no idea was going on. My three kids were in trauma and shock. And within 24 hours of that, the entire world knew. So this was not like, okay, what's going to happen with my marriage? I didn't even get to that for maybe a week or two. It was just digested. Wait, what happened? Who are you? Did you touch anyone? That was an important, I mean, way more than am I going to stay married was what did you do? Who are you? What is this? I had very, very good advice from some very well-trained professionals who said, look, you can get divorced. No one's saying you can't get divorced, but you're not going to get divorced tomorrow. Let's just, you know, take a breath and see what's what. And in fact, in terms of staying or going, that became something I was really interested in knowing the answer to. And some very wise people around me said, you, Maddie, are going to have to do some work to be okay. You're going to have to work on yourself. You're going to have to get your kids help. And that work is going to be the same whether you leave or you stay. I didn't think I could ever stay married, but I didn't even think about how to get divorced. The logistics of that weren't present for me immediately, which is not to say I thought I would be sitting here with you saying I was still married at all. It was a process, and it was like, okay, well, let's just do today. Let's just do Wednesday and see, should my daughter still go to driver's ed? Should my boys still go to the school they're going to? You know, I mean, there was a lot to process one day at a time, and it just became clearer. And then some days it was murky all over again. It was not ever a straightforward path.
Family helped out with their kids. Maddie kept going to work. She had no choice because Jace had been fired from all of his jobs and also advised to go into an incredibly expensive rehab in Arizona. It was around this time that Maddie was introduced to a woman she calls her angel, a friend of a friend who'd gone through something similar. Maddie doesn't want to say who this woman is, and trust me, I asked a lot, because apparently the angel is very, very famous. But besides being famous, she's also incredibly wise. Maddie credits her with keeping her sane. In the early days after Jace's arrest, her angel gave Maddie some very important advice. Stop worrying about what other people say to you. Don't think about what other people say to you. Fuck other people. Because of course, at that point, Maddie was getting calls and text messages from everyone she'd ever met. Many of them were ripping her husband to shreds, asking her when she'd divorce him. She got all the questions you think she got. Did you know? The answer to that is no. She genuinely had no idea. She didn't even know her husband watched porn, and that made her feel like a total fool. They asked her if he ever had contact with underage girls. The answer to that was also no. Jace watched underage pornography. He downloaded underage pornography. According to Maddie, he never had any contact with anyone. Friends offered her the numbers of their own divorce attorneys. They even offered to help pay for it. Maddie's kids were hurt and angry, but they were also resilient. More resilient than she ever knew they could be. But still, she hated her husband for causing them any sort of pain at all. That alone felt like reason to divorce him.
I'm a mama bear, you know, and seeing my kids hurting because of something someone did makes me want to hate that person. But my kids have lots of different responses. They're angry, they're hurt, and they love their dad, too. So I've gotten to witness all of that. It was and continues to be completely antithetical to how I was raised and who I am. I am all about worrying about the future. In my life right now, I have had to do the hardest thing in the world, which is to let go of the past and the future.
But then Jace left for 45 days of rehab. Maddie was alone with the kids trying to juggle everything. Get them ready to start school, get their wisdom teeth out, figure out how to get the playbook to the new soccer coach now that her husband was no longer allowed to coach the soccer team. She'd lost 10 pounds in 6 days. Her panic attacks were debilitating. She took off her wedding ring. It's time for a break. Be right back. With Jace gone in rehab, Maddie started to remember what it was like to be on her own.
That was really difficult, but also really important for me to remember. I'm going to be honest. I'm a feminist. I've worked all through my marriage. I went to Barnard, but I had not booked a plane ticket in years. I had not made arrangements for a rental car. I had not taken out the garbage. There were things that even in my adult feminist life, I had in some ways become this 1950s wife in some ways. And there was something empowering, even though I didn't see it at the time, about having to take over.
Weeks passed, and then it was time for Maddie to visit Jace in rehab. They call it family week, but since Jace was in rehab for sex addiction, the kids couldn't go. That meant Maddie didn't want to go because she didn't want to have to leave her kids, especially not during their first weeks at school. But then her teenage daughter said something to her that made her change her mind. She said, "Didn't you make a vow to love Dad in sickness and health?" Well, Dad is sick. So Maddie went. She flew to a tiny town in the middle of the desert in the middle of nowhere, Arizona. When she pulled into the facility, she saw a sign that told her to expect a miracle. She just laughed. What else could she do? Jace looked calm. Relaxed, tan. That made her want to punch him in the face. Maddie described that moment seeing Jace again to me, and it's a line that's really stuck with me. She said, "It's so weird when the person who has always comforted you is now the source of your deepest pain." But family week became this weird blessing. Jace and Maddie met with other families, other wives and husbands in the rehab, and Maddie was surprised that they were completely and totally normal. But it was also hard. There was plenty of screaming and sobbing. Jace and Maddie went to counseling. They talked a lot. Jace revealed things that happened to him in his past and his childhood, and it made Maddie so sad for him, but also angry all over again for keeping so many secrets from her. She felt betrayed. She felt like she'd always shared everything with this man, and he hadn't shared anything with her. The rehab had experts and scientists to explain about addiction, specifically addiction to pornography.
I never even thought about sex addiction. It sounded like something that was kind of a joke. Although I have had a lot of people with addiction in my life, I have struggled with an eating disorder, so I've been very, very helped myself by 12-step. I believe in 12-step. I believe in recovery. I believe in addiction, and I believed, which I think has helped me, I came with a set of beliefs that people are good people can do some really horrible things when struggling with addiction. However, I didn't ever think about porn addiction or sex addiction. I mean, I'm a real reader, so pretty quickly I read a lot of books, and it started to make some sense. Family Week was certainly like boot camp for that.
Maddie learned that pornography can be as addicting and stimulating as crystal meth. She started to believe it, but she believed it in the abstract. She believed it for other people. It was still impossible to believe that about her own husband. She began to feel this compassion for the other men in rehab, broken men who'd done terrible things. But she couldn't feel it for Jace. Not yet.
Family Week itself is incredible, and it was very, very hard, and I felt very lonely and very scared. But it was also a relief because for the first time, I wasn't around my kids, and I also wasn't around my town. I lived in a very small town. And whether it was true or my imagination, I believed that everyone was looking at me. So if I was at yoga or I was at the grocery store or I was at the pharmacy, I felt a lot of eyes on me. It was probably half and half. And so I didn't want to be weeping walking down the street, even though I felt like it. And I didn't want to be screaming on my bathroom floor where my kids could hear me. But in my little weird hotel room in this little weird town in Arizona, where I did not think I would ever see any of these people again, nor did I care what anyone thought of me, I could just, I cried more than I knew it was possible to cry, and I screamed, and honestly, I also felt love. I didn't feel like I could hug my husband or hold his hand or anything when I was home. And I didn't feel like doing it either, but here was a place where I could do whatever I felt like doing. And I had people who weren't hurting all around me. I mean, believe me, there were other people hurting around me, but they had their own stories.
At the end of the week, they met with another therapist, and Maddie agreed to let Jace come home under the condition that he sleep in their guest room. When Jace got home, Maddie put her wedding ring back on, but it was mostly for the kids' benefit.
I felt some kind of pressure to put it back on, not only because the kids were looking at me, but also the world. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I didn't need to make that statement yet, which again, I felt resentful of. I was like, oh, people are looking at my finger. People still do.
Jace was different when he got back from rehab. He prayed a lot, talked to his friends from rehab. He didn't curse anymore. It was a little thing, but also different. Maddie went to her support meetings where she talked and listened, and sometimes she just cried. When Thanksgiving came around, the grandparents took their kids away on a trip, and Maddie and Jace were alone. They cooked and talked, took long walks, and it felt right in a way that it hadn't in a really long time. After a few full days of that, Maddie was ready to invite Jace back into their bedroom. But then a lawyer called. The lawyer told Maddie she had to write a letter to the judge defending why Jace should be allowed to live with his children. Anger and shame bubbled right up again. Maddie found herself sobbing and screaming on the bathroom floor. There's no linear narrative here, no aha moment or turning point where things were suddenly good again. There can't be. Their marriage was a series of peaks and valleys, good with bad with terrible, love mixed with rage and hate. The morning after that phone call, Jace said the one thing Maddie really needed to hear. We'll get to it after the break. Just as Maddie and Jace were starting to rebuild their relationship, she got a call from a lawyer asking her to write a letter to defend why her husband should be allowed to continue to live with their kids. That derailed all their progress.
The lawyer saying, write a letter to the judge explaining why your husband should be allowed to live with his children, is just, it's heartbreaking. It's still heartbreaking. I hate that they have to deal with that. I do. And it makes me mad at him. Some days I have a lot of acceptance and understanding and compassion, and other days, other hours, other minutes, I don't.
But Jace didn't shy away from her rage. Instead, he said to her, I think I know what I did to you. It's like I ran you over with a cement truck. You're hurt, badly. Lying on the ground, bleeding, and then I backed up and ran over you a second time. And then I got out of the truck and called the ambulance, and when the ambulance finally shows up, I get into the ambulance and drive away, leaving you there on the ground. It was the first time Maddie felt like he understood how she felt. That's one of the things that helped her actually start to heal. She didn't want her old marriage back after everything. She needed something new. And she also didn't want to keep wearing her old wedding ring.
It felt like he had broken our vows. Now, it's not a traditional breaking of the vows. It was a breaking of the vows, in my opinion and my feeling. So I didn't want to wear a ring that felt not right. So at one point, my kids were away, and it was just the two of us for the first time in a very long time. And I said, I want to go find a new ring. I was very scared, correctly, about spending money, and I certainly wasn't going to go spend money on a ring, but I wanted a new ring. I'm not very fancy in my life. I have a particular kind of taste. I wanted something that I liked, and I thought, you know, let's just go to Soho and see. Maybe something's on sale, maybe something, and this is important. This is something that means something to me. I want to be wearing a ring because I want it to say I'm married, but I don't want this ring, and it feels not right. We went into the city. We were still living in Westchester at the time, and we looked in these stores, and nothing felt right, and things were too big or too expensive. Then I saw a guy on the sidewalk with a table full of rings, and I was like, oh, thank you, God. And the guy who was selling the ring said, what are you looking for? And I said, I want a ring for this finger, my wedding finger, and I want it to be, and I think I just came up with saying, beautiful, but delicate and strong and unique. And he said, okay, hold on. And he reached under the table and there was this kind of little cubby area that I hadn't noticed.
He pulled out this tiny silver ring with a scarlet stone in a sweet setting.
I put it on and it fit, which is bananas. So it felt kind of meant to be. And then the guy said, it's $50. My husband was very, very happy because, you know, he really wanted to get this ring. And I said, wait. And I think he thought I was going to say, no, we're not going to get it. But I just said, put your money away. And I took out my own money and I paid for the ring. And it's my ring. It's my ring that I gave to myself. And I choose to be married to him. And I do love him. And I am proud of him for many things. And it's really complicated and really messy.
Maddie Corman married her best person, her best friend, her confidant, and, as she says, her true blue love. She still says that. In fact, she's saying it 8 times a week in a one-woman show that she's written and stars in about what happened to her marriage. It's called Accidentally Brave, and it's running in New York through July. Yeah. 8 times a week, Maddie talks about the worst thing that's ever happened to her. But somehow the show isn't morbid. It's not like watching a car crash, even though some people in the audience might expect it to be or even want it to be. When Maddie tells her story, she's hopeful. Maddie and Jace have a totally different life than the one they used to have. It's not just their marriage that's different. He used to be this fancy director and producer, and now he can't really get much work. Maddie wrote her one-woman show as a way to give herself consistent work. She's the breadwinner now. But through the show, she also found a way to work out her demons. They sold their house in Westchester and recently moved to an apartment in Harlem. In the early days after Jace's arrest, one of Maddie's friends, her angel actually, told her something. She said, hey, your kids are going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And I think maybe even your husband's going to be okay. You guys aren't going to believe it now, but your life just took a great turn for the better. This will be the best thing that's ever happened to your family. It was impossible to believe at the time, and it's still kind of impossible to believe now. But Maddie does understand what she meant.
I didn't know that there was a secret in my marriage, but I would hope to say now, and I believe now, that there are no secrets in my marriage. We've had to do so much work. I think I'm with someone who works every single day on himself spiritually. I'm with someone who fell down as pretty hard as you can fall, and in public. The worst thing that you've ever done has been broadcast everywhere. It took me a very long time to have compassion for him, and I mean very long, like maybe last week. And I did say to him, you know, maybe I don't need to punish you anymore. You know, you've lost your career, you've lost your standing in the community, you've lost all the charity work you used to do, you've lost coaching the kids, which was something he really loved. Just, you've lost, we lost a lot of money, you've just lost everything. And he looked at me and he said, I didn't lose everything.
If you or someone you know has been a victim of any kind of sexual violence, don't be afraid to reach out to the National Sexual Assault Hotline at the number 1-800-656-HOPE. That's 1-800-656-HOPE. You can also learn more information at the National Center for Victims of Crime, victimsofcrime.org.
This episode was hosted and reported by Joe Piazza, with special thanks to Maddie Corman. It was produced and edited by Ramsey Yunt, with mixing by Tristan McNeil. The executive producers are Joe Piazza, Tyler Klang, and Julie Douglas. Theme song and music by Tristan McNeil. For comments, suggestions, or to be part of the show, give us a call at 404-996-1173. That's 404-996-1173. Or send us an email at joe@committedpodcast.com. That's joe@committedpodcast.com. You grab a copy of Joe's book, How to Be Married, on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Committed is a production of iHeartRadio and produced at our studios located in Atlanta, Georgia. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.